time. Really, really appreciate it. A lot of conversation around the constitutional ruling declaring that fathers are now entitled to the same parental leave benefits as mothers. Why is this such a significant ruling from the Constitutional Court? Good evening.
Good evening, Aubrey. Good evening. Thanks for having me. It's great to be on the show. It's quite a significant judgment in that we're suddenly starting to see such a change in our law that is recognizing the other parents. It's not even just about fathers. It's about whoever the second parent is or may be in a relationship suddenly getting additional rights. And I think the controversy comes both from both ways, in that firstly they're now getting equal rights to what would be what a birthing mother was getting, and some feel mixed emotions over that. And then on the other side of the coin, we're now starting to see also adoptive parents, commissioning parents, who have gone the surrogacy route, they're all getting the same rights as well. So that's something to be celebrated as well. So there's a few different things going on.
Why is it controversial? I mean, why? I would imagine that this would be a moment of celebration. But clearly some people have some serious misgivings. Where do the misgivings come from?
Yeah, I think the first thing that's important for all of us to remember is that there's now, from the Constitutional Court ruling, we've got some interim arrangements, which I think, you know, is going to be the initial upset and interpretation of how does this apply, and there's a bit for employers to do. And you know, after the 36 months, or hopefully before, we'll start to see the legislature bring in what the real amendments are going to be. So, you know, this is just temporary. Which I think is important. Well, I think the celebration is there to a certain degree, but I think, you know, certainly when I have a look at the judgment, where I understand the misgivings to really be coming in is, you know, it's one thing to say that parents have the right to choose how they would like to govern this period of time to nurture their child, which I completely agree with. But when you start to say that, well, if you can't agree how you're going to split this 4 months and 10 days, well, then you're going to split it equally. And I think that might be where certain controversy comes in, that either a mother or father is going to be forced to go back to work where they may not necessarily be ready or want to still spend more time with their child because they can't agree on how they're going to split it together.
Let me see if I understand.
Sure.
Prior to this ruling, the yes. status quo was that a mom who's just given birth has the right to take, what, 4 months leave, maternal leave?
4 months.
Four months, right.
Yeah.
The interpretation of the ruling is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the dad can also take 4 months ruling. I mean, 4 months, or let me say the second parent, because obviously in same-sex relationships, the other spouse might not be a dad, but the other spouse can take four months leave as well, or is it a split between the 4 months for both? So in other words, 2 months each?
Yeah, so it's an aggregate. So the court has said so the initial court said that, or let me take a step back. First, we had birthing mothers were given 4 months maternity leave.
Right.
Then the initial court that heard this matter said, no, they find that that is discriminatory, and put in some interim provisions that said that this aggregate should apply of the 4 months across both parents. Then there was various misgivings around that, because what happens to the 10 days? And it was essentially shortening the period of time. Now the Concord has said, well, we think the interim arrangement should be 4 months plus the 10 days that you would have gotten as parental leave. And you as parents on an aggregate must decide who's taking what. Now, there is certain provisions in place, obviously, for a parent that is a birthing parent. for obviously physiological recovery.
Yes.
But now what we're seeing is this 4 months and 10 days is applicable on an aggregate to any type of parent. So whether you were the birthing parent, adoptive parent, or you have had a child via surrogacy and now you've become a mom or a dad, now there's everyone is entitled to this. The adoption is slightly, the Concord goes further into that about this age cap of 2, but I think that's a separate issue. But now everyone is sought to get the same period of time. But it's not, and I think this is where it, I think we're starting to see, should we be legislators start looking outside of the box, that it should be 4 months, 4 months, as you initially suggested, or not this aggregate. Yeah. Over the two parents, which if you had to split it down the middle, you're getting 2 months and 5 yes. days each.
Is that an option for the legislative part of the equation? In other words, Parliament can now suggest that instead of the aggregating of the 4 months and 10 days, that they will suggest 4 months, 4 months for both parents. In other words, an aggregation of 8 months now.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the legislature has the power to completely rewrite it. So I think certainly my hope would be that we would move beyond the confines of what our law currently has and try to relook at whether it still meets the purpose. You know, if I look at the UK law, for instance, and please, I'm no expert on it, but, you know, mothers can, and this is, I understand in relation to mothers, they get they can take up to a year's maternity.
Sure.
Which I used to think was ridiculous until I had my own child and then I realized it wasn't. but they've got a different system where, and it's something that I think speaks to the concerns here, because there's a concern about overburdening the UIF. And who would fund these benefits, so to speak.
Yes.
Whereas the UK has a system, as far as I understand it, where not the full year is paid for, but they incentivize employers to pay, and the employer gets some form of tax rebate if you do pay your employees for maternity leave. And so there's a different way of kind of selling it to try get more time out for parents to look after their children and raise them, and also trying to get the financial part of it to match. Whereas we may not have the funds in the UIF, but perhaps there's a tax regime that could be put in place that incentivizes employers to pay.
Listen, I want to take a step back to the Concord again and say, the ruling is based on what principle? In other words, it's clear that the Concord is not directing anybody to do any specific thing. It is saying, if I understand the ruling from what you're explaining now, it is saying, as things have been, we have a discriminatory regime here. We are sending it back to Parliament for you guys to find the most equitable application of the principle. I'm interested to understand what the principle was that they used to come to the conclusion that the law as it has been is faulty.
Sure. So I think it's important to understand how the matter came about. How did it get before the Concord?
Yes.
And so we've got this couple, Mr. and Mrs. Van Wyk, and they had a baby, and the wife runs two businesses of her own, and she was not able to take the full time off or full 4 months off to look after their newborn child. And therefore, her husband had approached his employer and asked whether he could take the 4 months. And he was denied this. The employer said, no, you are only entitled to 10 consecutive days paternity or parental leave, and that's all the law provides for you as a father. he then ultimately took 6 months unpaid leave to look after their child while his wife went back to run her businesses, as that was, from what I understand, their primary source of income. And then they took this matter on to the High Court, claiming that the maternity leave provisions were unfair discrimination. Then there were a number of different friends of the court that joined these matters to then say, well, this also applies to parents who are adoptive parents who are only getting 10 consecutive weeks when they get a child. And then the same is for those who commission a surrogacy and get a brand new baby. They also are only getting 10 consecutive weeks.
Because the law only applied to a birthing mother, eh?
Correct. Okay. That's right. And so it was only, the law was only applying these 4 months to those who were a birthing mother. And so it was on that base that the court looked at the test for discrimination and what were we actually drawing a distinction between, and was that distinction rational and fair? And that's basically the principle that we've come full circle on, yes, in that they have found that this, in essence, is unfair discrimination, in that there is no rational distinction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Was the conversation about the physiological sort of recuperation of the birthing mother and the amount of time that takes, and what informed the 4 months to begin with? There a conversation around that?
There was. So the initial court especially, and I think it's also just important to note that in the initial matter, the Minister of Employment and Labour at the time opposed this matter and filed an affidavit with a number of assertions. Whereas in the Concord, we obviously now have a new minister, and she did not oppose it. She just abided by the court, but has said that she agrees that it's unfair discrimination. But this issue of the physiological recovery was more of a topic in the High Court. And that's what the minister basically argued, was saying that that's why the 4 months is there, that, you know, a birthing mother needs, you know, the time before the birth potentially to rest. And you've got the entitlement to go off 4 weeks before. And there's this cap that you cannot go back to work for at least a minimum of 6 weeks post a birth.
Yes.
Unless it's signed off. And this was it was a big topic then, and that's what they were saying was the fair distinction, and that's why. Whereas the Concord disagreed. They came around and said, yeah, we acknowledge that there's a physiological need and recovery period, but that the real true purpose behind parental leave is nurturing. And that was their main rationale, is that they were saying that they don't find that the physiological recovery is enough to say that this is why this distinction exists.
And they base that on what? Was there a study that was commissioned?
They mainly put it around nurturing, that the whole purpose is around nurturing, and that it's for parents, the opportunity over this time is for them to decide how they tend to nurture their child.
And so the recuperation, the physical recuperation of the birthing mom would then have to be accommodated by that nurturing principle.
Yeah. So what they do in the interim arrangements, at least, is that they say that that has to happen. That will still apply to a birthing mother. The cap on the six weeks postpartum,
yes,
and the 4 weeks prior, that will still be available. And that leave must be taken consecutively. So basically a birthing mother is guaranteed
6 weeks.
4 weeks prior to the birth and 6 weeks after.
Right.
And I think that's why they then also threw the 10 days in, because post the birth, the other parent could then have at least those 10 days without it diminishing the overall 4 months. But basically, a birthing mother is guaranteed the 6 weeks postpartum. And then if they can't agree on how to split the remainder of the time, she's got another, what is it, not even another, it's a total of 8 weeks.
Right.
That's
right.
Another 2 weeks.
I get that there's quite a technical sort of side to this whole thing that would require greater attention. By the way, give us a call at 11-883-0702. Lucinda Hinksman is my guest, Head of Employment and Labor at CMS. We're talking about the recent Concord ruling that declared that fathers are now entitled to the same parental leave benefits as mothers. I'd be interested to hear your opinion about this. What do you make of it? On the face of it, it sounds to me like it's something that should be celebrated. But it appears that there are details in all of this that need to perhaps be understood a little bit better. One is the UIF contribution to, I suppose, both parents. Should both of them decide to take the parental leave, that will be determined now by Parliament, and it appears that Parliament has the prerogative to decide how long that leave must be, and it can in fact be up to a year if the the legislation in the UK is anything to go by. Who's going to pay for all of that time? So it appears that there are all sorts of issues that are there. But I am interested, and I'm asking the question again, perhaps in a different way, Lucinda, to say, the opinions expressed by the Concord to change this law were based on what? On what study? I mean, if the understanding is that, look, it's all about nurturing and not so much about the biological or physiological requirements of the birthing mother, it's all about nurturing. So surrogacy parents, adoptive parents are entitled to all of those benefits, just like any other parent. The principle there is very clear that we want to see fairness, we want to see rationality. But is there more to their decision making than just, no, we think it's nurturing and not necessarily biology or physiology?
Well, there were a number of animate curiae that participated in this process. So they all filed their submissions, which they would have based off of evidence, which, factual studies, and they would have guided the court in these things.
Right.
So it certainly wouldn't have been something that the judges just
arbitrarily,
arbitrarily came up with and thought was the way to go. And there were really significant friends of the court that participated in the process, and I think were very helpful to understand what actually happens in actuality in these things. Because I think sometimes laws can be made more from an ideal perspective,
yes,
and not necessarily from a practical perspective.
Yes.
And so there would have been those submissions that they would have taken into account. And I think the minister's submissions in the Concord were also of great significance, because she admitted, as soon as the gates opened, we accept this is unfair discrimination, we accept things have to change, and we're already on the way to doing it. So I think that also helps them get over a few of the hurdles a lot quicker, and perhaps not, there was less need to unpack these issues in a lot more greater detail because of the concession made by the minister.
Please give us a call, 011-883-0702. If you're in Joburg, in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. Lucinda Hinksman's my guest. She is Head of Employment and Labor at CMS. Lindy asks this question. So can a surrogate take the recovery period but with no baby? I feel the 6 weeks should be separate from the 4 months, says Lindy. And then somebody else who anonymous says, if girlfriend won,
I'm
just reading it. I'm thinking, okay, here we go. if girlfriend one gives birth in January and girlfriend two gives birth in May, so the dad gets 8 months, asks Anonymous. And I suppose at this stage we don't have an answer for that because that is for legislation to determine. Lucinda?
Yes. So I think let's answer the first question.
Yes.
Which was on the surrogate. And this is something, it's such a great question because it's something that came up when the High Court gave out their interim arrangements as well.
Yep.
In that our law, even to this day, doesn't really cater for it. And even these interim arrangements don't cater for it. So as much as we know is that they will definitely get the 6 weeks because of the physiological need to recover.
Right.
But then what? And so I agree 100% with Lindy in saying, well, now what happens? And I think it is something that has to be dealt with separately because there's no nurturing happening. It's a mere recovery of yourself.
Yes.
And so that is something the legislature will need to consider and put in place. And I do think it should be something separate. Now, in terms of our girlfriends, who are having multiple babies or multiple babies, multiple girlfriends.
Yes.
That would be, on the current arrangements, I suspect it would be, you would be entitled to split the 4 months and 10 days as you see fit with each girlfriend. And failing agreement, you're going to get 2 months and 5 days each. So it wouldn't be 8 months, it would be cumulative. Each mother, I'm going to say in this instance, each girlfriend is going to get, and him would get the 4 months and 10 days collectively, and they'd have to split it, and then the same for the second. Mm. But what the legislature will do, obviously, we'll have to, they won't be catering for those particular situations. It will just be done per pregnancy, per child.
Oh, 011-883-0702. That's there's a part of me that wants to agree with you that indeed sometimes laws can be enacted based on the ideal idea, right? The idealism behind an idea, and that of course the practicalities have a different story to tell. Do you feel like this is one such case?
I think it is to a certain degree. And I think perhaps, you know, even the initial, you know, our legislature has walked a long path in our employment laws. And I appreciate that. And sometimes some of it is a bit of a compromise. And I do think how our BCA currently reads with, you know, the adoptive parent leave, the commissioning leave, we celebrated that when that first came in. Because it was something that never existed and was people who never had rights before. But did it practically work? No. It didn't really make any sense as to why they were any different. And so now we're going to make further strides again to reimagine this law. And that's why I come back to the hope that the legislature is going to look at this completely anew. And from a very practical perspective, and not simply trying to work within the confines of what our law currently provides, which is this 4 months. And I'm hoping they're going to ask the question of, is there a logic to the 4 months? And where does that come from? And does it still work? Especially if it's unpaid. What is the impact economically to people? Obviously, it's unpaid from the employer's perspective if they don't pay. But
is it fair to say? I've got to really find the right way to say what I want to say. Is it fair to say that the Concord should have given us more guidelines than simply saying this is not rational? It is unfair discrimination. Send it back to Parliament. You guys make a decision around this. Should they, if they understood it to be unfair, unconstitutional, and discriminatory, should they not have given more guidelines, more direction, given the fact that there are clearly financial considerations to be put in place. There's got to be incentives put in place for businesses that may lose person hours, as it were, and productivity. I'm getting the feeling that the Concord didn't go far enough.
Yeah, I think it's always a difficult one for them. And I think they often pick up a bit of flack for this. But because of the separation of powers, they've got to be quite mindful that they are not delving into lawmaking. And especially the issue around money, it's dealt with in terms of the judgment and you know the impact of the UIF. And they acknowledged that they did not have enough at their disposal to make guidelines or recommendations as to what they should look at there. I mean, I think that's just a case of not, the evidence not being placed before the court. But you know, when it comes to issues relating to finances and treasury and things like that, They've come up against this before. There's the great case of Kruip Boom about the right to shelter.
Yeah.
And, they got into such trouble there of them saying, well, you've now interfered and you've given away all this government money. And I think they run into the same issue now. And there's always this very delicate balance of how far can they go in terms of being prescriptive or, more of a guideline. And if it's a guideline, what happens if it's not followed? And so I think it is a delicate line. I think they've given some very good things to think about in the judgment. I think they've laid it out in terms of what they need to go away and think about. And also, I haven't seen the minister's submissions, and perhaps she has already given some sort of indication as to what these reforms may be that she is proposing.
Let's take some calls.
I'm not sure.
Let's take some calls. Tabang is in Braamfontein. Good evening to you, Tabang.
Good evening, Aubrey and the Evertrix. Aubrey, for me, the whole outreach around this issue, from what I understand, is that this judgment is not going to be imposed on individuals, on couples, because if the couple is going to separate to divide the leave into 2 months each, since it's 4 months, they can decide if the mother is having fully recovered, the father can decide, okay, fine, I'm going to take my 2 months. And if the mother is recovered, then they can decide, okay, fine, you can take your 2 months, I'll take my 2 months.
Sure.
So it's not as if you are forced to do this, don't do that.
Yeah.
So people shouldn't confuse this thing and stop fear-mongering as if somebody's rights are going to be violated. And Aubrey, another thing, if I'm an adoptive parent, I have any right to bond with my child, right? So this constitutional court judgment has come at the right time. It's a right step in the rights for adoptive parents, because they must bond with their children.
So the reason why this case went to the High Court and later to the Constitutional Court was because the amount of time that was provided by the previous legislation to both parents who were in a particular circumstance. Mom had a business. She couldn't take all of the 4 months. Dad then took unpaid leave. The principle that was applied would still remain if we argued that a parent needs time to bond with their child. Maybe that might not be enough time. You know what I mean? I'm saying the limitlessness of this intervention by the Concord for me doesn't solve the problem that the couple came with to begin with. All it does is that it just says, listen, this doesn't look right. It's unfair. It's unfair discrimination. You guys come up with a solution. I think that they've made the problem even bigger.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if it will be possible for whoever's going to sort out this issue. Maybe they can, if it's possible, to take it back to the Concord and say, help us with the guidelines, how to implement it, and then raise all the...
But shouldn't the Concord have done that in the first place?
Well, they haven't. That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's possible that they take it back and ask for guidelines.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Thabang, thanks very much. I appreciate it. Buti is in Indwa, Eastern Cape. Good evening to you, Buti.
Good evening, Aubrey.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, my brother.
Oh, okay, thank you very much for taking my call, Aubrey. Aubrey, yeah. I'm just calling to clarify one aspect by one of the listeners.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I will receive SMS or what.
Yeah.
But she was asking, what if maybe a first girlfriend gets pregnant in this period and will that mean a person will get 8 months? Albeit that is still a new law, not already a law. It's a judgment by the court. But
yes.
I think that it will be just like the sick leave. If you remember, in a sick leave situation, you might have 36 days for sick leave.
Yes.
But that sick leave, you won't take it as it is. You need to be sick for a particular period. It has its guidelines.
Yes.
Whereby, if maybe you are a person who is perpetually sick, you'll be called in for a form of disciplinary hearing. It's a consultation or something.
Sure.
But discussing your health, not the details of your health, but the details of your attendance in the workplace,
yeah.
Whereby they will say to you, no, due to the fact that you are medically, you are not fit to work, then they dismiss you on the basis of medical body, whereby that person will be terminated from the work because of his status of health, and he's not a person who's contributing to the company. The law allows that. But if you get an expert, you'll go in details, get the basic conditions of Employment Act, you go to the sick leave, that section, you'll see exactly, because our people always have a problem that of misinterpreting these laws and think that they qualify for a particular thing. But if it's drafted, it will show certain element where it says that you cannot exceed this period. Then it will be problematic to even to the people who have polygamy, who are in polygamy, whereby one wife is pregnant with better format. They will deal with that. It won't be a situation of taking 8 months in 1 year. Then it means that you didn't work for the company, you didn't contribute.
Buti in Indwa.
Thank
you very much. Buti in Indwa, Eastern Cape. I suppose there's going to be a lot of interpretation here. In other words, the legislation or the legislature is going to have its work cut out for it to come up with the right guidelines for different scenarios and contexts, I imagine, Lucinda.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's so many different contexts, and I think, you know, it's great that we are recognizing that, you know, the nuclear traditional family doesn't exist anymore in isolation. There are many ways in which a family is put together these days, and the legislature is now going to actually have this task of trying to deal with that, trying to cater with it. And then the other side of the coin, which Buti just reminded me of me now, is employers are going to need to regulate these things as well. And, you know, it's also on them, because now it's something that we've never really had to pay attention to. But now if we're going to have to be giving any employee, who, irrespective of if they're the mother, father, or who in the relationship, up to 4 months or more, how do we regulate if the other parent is employed or not? How do we know how much leave that other parent is taking? And to this exact example of having, you know, multiple babies in 1 year, how much leave does that person get? And is the employer who's been historically happy to pay a mother on maternity leave, are they willing to extend that pay now to the second parent? Or are we going to start seeing revisions on that? So it is certainly complex.
You see, because I suppose I'm happy to see that we are recognizing the fact that the idea or the concept of family is now very, very fluid. But I wish the Concord had taken upon itself the same responsibility that it has created by sort of throwing the cat amongst the pigeons, as it were, because the work that now needs to be done at the level of the employee, I mean, at the level of the employer, at the level of the legislature, all of those kinds of things could really put us in further constitutional turmoil, right? As the priorities of the employer start to perhaps clash with the priorities of legislation that has been put in place on the basis of certain principles that are not necessarily connected to practicality, we may be heading towards greater confusion. And therefore, I ask the question, was the constitutional wise in simply saying this thing is not constitution, doesn't align with the ideas of constitutional equity and fairness and all of those kinds of things, and not giving us a little bit more? I think that they've given us a bigger problem than a solution.
Yeah, it's certainly, I think they've tried in terms of the interim arrangements. They've certainly improved on them from the High Court interim arrangements. But, and again, I think it's, you know, how far can they stray? How far can they dictate what it should be? I do think it's an unenviable task. I will say that. But it does leave us with a lot more questions
than
answers. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's one of those who sometimes we need to be careful what we wish for.
Yeah.
In that it is great that everyone is getting equal rights to a certain degree. I'm not sure it is all equal, because I do, maybe because I've just come off my own maternity leave, I feel like if I'd had to share those months with anyone else, they wouldn't have survived. but, you know, that's why I'm the single parent. I was, so my situation's cut and dry. But, you know, so some people may feel rights are being taken away. But certainly, I think in terms of the majority case, what rights are being given. But it's now, how do we regulate that? How do we regulate the ever-evolving fluidity of what family means? And I think what's going to be a driving force behind all of this is, how do we solve the finances behind it? Mm. And balancing those socioeconomic factors, because I do think that is where compromise has come in historically, is what is a decent amount of time off, but it's also unpaid. You know, and I think there was some trade-off there. And perhaps we might see something similar coming in, but now we're talking about two people.
So, Lucinda, thanks very much. I really, really appreciate your time. And how do people get in touch with you?
Sure, they can reach out to me on the CMS website. All my details are there. Alternatively, my email address is lucinda.hinksman@cms-rm.com.
Lucinda Hinksman, Head of Employment and Labour at CMS.
Zahira was tired. So tired, she let her